Well, we've almost made it through another week, everybody. Welcome inside our ESPN studios here in Northern Nevada. A lot to get to today. We will talk some basketball here momentarily. Nevada women's basketball back on the floor last night and had a terrific showing against Utah State. So we'll talk about that. Also talk a little NBA coming up in this segment. But also coming up on the show, we'll talk some NHL. We'll also talk some NFL, some news around some big names. Right now in the NFL, Russell Wilson, J.J. Watt. So we'll talk a little bit about that and then wrap up the show at the end of the hour. But happy to be here with you on this Thursday. And let's talk a little bit about Nevada basketball. The women's basketball team back in action last night. Their first game since picking up a big-time win in the second game on the road against Boise State, where they beat the Broncos 64-44. Then had two games against San Jose State and Colorado State canceled, but were back on the floor last night taking on the Aggies of Utah State, and Nevada coming away with a 63-40 victory over Utah State. And Coach Levins mentioned it. I was talking about it a little bit yesterday, but you are a little nervous for the chemistry around your team, momentum around your team, and just the role that both Nevada men's and women's basketball teams seem to be getting on before their pause occurred. But you just worry about, will they be able to get back into that? Will they be able to get back into that rhythm and keep that momentum going? And although Nevada got the first bucket of the game last night, then went a little cold for the rest of that first quarter before they were able to have the big one. That's what it's come down to this year for Nevada. On what side are you going to be when it comes to that big quarter? Are you going to be on the side that suffers the big quarter, or that basks in it? And they were able to have a big first quarter against Utah State. They ended the first quarter on a 13-0 run, did Nevada, to have a 15-4 lead after the first 10 minutes, then outscored Utah State 15-9 in the second quarter. So Nevada taking a 30-13 lead into the locker room. And the third quarter was the most competitive of the game, with Utah State coming out relatively hot from the field before Nevada was able to get back into that defensive effort and then find a rhythm of their own, and then really just kind of controlled the pace and controlled the tempo and controlled the game in that fourth quarter and just kind of cruised to that 63-40 victory. But really a great job by Nevada, again, defensively as well. And while their offense hasn't always this season been at that high level, I feel like their defense this year has besides maybe a couple games here or there, has really been top-notch all year long. And especially coming back, with that first game since February 7th, you hope that you can lean on that defense, that your defense kind of feeds into your offense, that you're able to get stops and get yourself some good opportunities on the other end. And, again, being able to while they were not shooting well in the first quarter, able to keep Utah State off the board as well, and then came back with that 13-0 run to close out the first 10 minutes. So the fact that Nevada had that defense going last night, I think really helped them out in just getting back into that offensive rhythm, which really I feel like they were able to do before the end of the first quarter. There was a stretch for maybe 3-4 minutes there in the first quarter after they had gotten their first bucket. So in those first kind of few minutes where Nevada just wasn't hitting anything, but then they really caught fire offensively, and that defense was there for them all night. Rebounding as well, a big night for Nevada, as they were able to dominate the boards against Utah State. And really just all up and down the lineup, Nevada had some really good contribution from everybody in that lineup. I mean, every player, for the most part, most players had at least, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players with at least 4 rebounds in the game last night. You had a handful of players with at least 5 points, and a fantastic showing from Leyte Otuafi off the bench, who had 16 points. She led the way for the pack coming off the bench last night. Deja Hamilton and Amaya West led the starters, each with 9 points. But talked about that from Nevada's men's basketball point of view as well. If they can have a game where they get at least one player coming off the bench, giving them a little bit of a spark, that can really make the difference for that team. And I feel like the same for Nevada as well. If they can have a presence off the bench that comes in and gives you a boost either offensively or defensively. It just gives you some kind of boost out there on the floor. That's really not a bad thing for a team to have. And while that hasn't always been there for Nevada's women's team this season, to have Otuafi coming off the bench last night giving up contributing 16 points for the Pack, as well as 8 rebounds as well. She was the leading rebounder for Nevada, just 2 rebounds shy of her second double-double for the Pack. But nonetheless, a great performance there from Otuafi last night. And from the whole team, again, defensively, as a team, they did a really good job of just shutting down Utah State. I mean, this is a team that shot just 24% from the field overall, 16% from the three-point line. And again, you look at bench points, second chance points, not able to keep up with Nevada and what they were able to do. Nevada had 18 second chance points to Utah State's 6, and then 38 bench points to Utah State's 5. Now, you know, about half of that coming from Otuafi, but still, to have 38 points off the bench is always going to be a nice helping hand there for any team in the world of basketball. So the fact that Nevada was able to get that performance from Otuafi, but also from their entire bench, just a great way to come back in from that pause and have that kind of a confidence-boosting performance. And it's nice to be at home as well. You know, tough to come off the pause and go on the road. So the fact that the women's team got to open up or reopen up their season back here at home, I feel like was mentally a nice place for them to be in order to do that. But a great showing there from the Nevada women's basketball team. And really, just can't say enough about what this team was able to do last night, coming off that pause and being able to, you know, just pick up that defensive effort really where they left off in that second game against Boise State, and offensively as well. Again, a little bit of a slow start in the first half of that first quarter, but really from the end of that first quarter onward, it was a game that offensively Nevada had control of, and Deja Hamilton as well able to reach a milestone, getting her 600th point in her career last night in the game. So hats off to Deja Hamilton, the young woman that's just a complete star for this basketball team, but also just a really strong showing from the entire Nevada women's basketball team last night. And they will look for the sweep tonight. They will host Utah State again, and that will be same time as last night's game. Tip-off set for 5 o'clock. So if you're listening to the game, which I recommend you do, on our sister station, 94.1 FM and 1450 AM, pregame will start at 4:40. And the tip-off for the final home game of the regular season for the Nevada women's basketball team tonight at 5 o'clock against Utah State. And then, of course, just 2 games on the road against Air Force. And then it's time to look at the Mountain West tournament for the women's team. So it's crazy to think that, you know, again, with all of these sports, with all of these seasons, whether it's professional, collegiate, high school, so many questions around whether, you know, how much of the season you'll be able to get in. When you get towards the end of the season like this, it just feels different this time around than it has in the past. But awesome to see the Nevada women's basketball team closing on the end of their season. They are now 10-8 overall, 6-7 in conference on that 2-game winning streak. And they've been able to lock down home floor, 6-3 here at home. So hopefully they can get that sweep over Utah State, go to 11-8, get that conference record to 500, and keep that home record well above 500 on the year. But looking forward to that, let's stay in the world of basketball for a little bit. Let's just transition over to the NBA. First off, order has been restored to the universe, and Devin Booker is an All-Star. One of many snubs, and I wish more snubs had the opportunity to get into the All-Star game this year, but Anthony Davis obviously has been injured now for a little while for the Lakers. It was a pretty big question mark of if he'd even be healthy, and then if he'd even really be able to play in the All-Star game. But the answer to those questions are no, he will not be playing in the All-Star game. So Devin Booker got the nod for the Western Conference to take that spot. And while I don't think it should have taken a player injury for him to get into the All-Star game, he should be an All-Star. He is an All-Star now. And thankfully, I can not freak out like I was yesterday. But good to see that that Devin Booker got into the All-Star, gets into the All-Star game. But a lot of action happening really out west, and an interesting storyline this year has been Utah and the fact that they just continue to really put on a show. I mean, right now they are still first place in the Western Conference. They have a 3.5 game lead on the Clippers right now, and second the Lakers. And with the game last night, getting relatively manhandled by Utah. Now, this is a Lakers team, of course, that's down Anthony Davis, but still, Utah last night, 114-89 over the Lakers, and it was just a really impactful performance from Rudy Gobert and Jordan Clarkson as well. Obviously, Gobert and Donovan Mitchell are the guys that get the most attention for that team. But Jordan Clarkson last night, a good game, 18 points off the bench, matched Rudy Gobert's 18 points for leading scorer for Utah in the game last night. Donovan Mitchell with 13. But what really stands out, I mean, the fact that Utah's defense, again, just kind of creating, you know, tough situations for that Lakers offense. And when LeBron James is your leading scorer, that's not abnormal, obviously, for him to be the leading scorer. But when he is the leading scorer of your team and has just 19 points, chances are it was not a good night for you guys. And the Lakers right now, just again, kind of the same problem around LeBron type teams, as can he carry this team now without Anthony Davis out there? Can LeBron figure out the way he's done it in the past with Cleveland teams? Can he figure out how to get this team through this slump, through this downswing that they're going through right now without Anthony Davis, and figure out? Now, again, there's no, I don't think there's real reason to hit the panic button. It's not like the Lakers are falling out of you know, the top eight in the Western Conference. They're still third place in the West behind the Clippers in Utah, so it's not like the Lakers are plummeting out of the standings. But this is not a good look for a team that, again, champions and have been, you know, just kind of hitting. I mean, they're 9-7 at home this year. Yes, it's not the same home court advantage, but still, just hasn't had the same feeling to this team this year, and that's been because Utah's been playing so well. The Clippers seem to have something kind of figured out with how they're managing Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, some injuries on that team this year, but it just feels like the Lakers, without Anthony Davis, shouldn't be struggling this much. We knew it was going to be a bit of an adjustment for this team. You lose one of your two big stars, but the fact the Lakers have struggled as much as they have now, I mean, they've lost a row without Anthony Davis out there. I think they're 5-5, if I'm not correct, or right around that mark without Anthony Davis this year. So this is just not a good look for a Lakers team that, again, most people, and they still are up towards the top of the Western Conference, but a team that's struggling this much without Anthony Davis, it's just not a good look for that offense and that team right now. And we'll see if they can get it turned around. And that narrative, again, can LeBron lead a team that, without Anthony Davis there, doesn't have necessarily standout stars? There are obviously still really talented guys on this team, like Montrezl Harrell, that gave him a good performance off the bench last night in that game against the Jazz. He had 16 points in the game last night for the Lakers. He was the second highest scorer next to LeBron James. But, you know, you have, you know, guys like Marc Gasol on this team that can add, you know, some weapons to your arsenal each night. Guys like Kyle Kuzma, Alex Caruso. So there's guys, there's talent on this team, but there's not necessarily LeBron James and Anthony Davis type talent. So when you have that lack of a star out there, it's kind of the same thing that's been surrounding LeBron James teams. Can he lead them? And as of right now, I'm not sure he can. Now, we'll have to see if Utah keeps up this incredible run that they've been on, this incredible play they've had this year, because it's no guarantee they're going to be able to keep that up as well with the pace they've set for themselves. But still, the fact the Lakers are struggling this much without Anthony Davis. And you know what? They lost to Utah, which, again, not a bad team to lose to. They're the best team in the NBA right now, record-wise. But to lose to the Wizards, to lose to the Heat, two games that they should not lose and did lose without Anthony Davis out there. And those are the type of teams that, even without Anthony Davis, there's still enough talent on that team where they should be winning those games, especially at home, no less. This was the first game, last night's loss to the Jazz, the first game in this four-game losing streak that happened away from the Staples Center. So to be at home without Anthony Davis, losing to teams like the Wizards and like the Heat, not a good look. So we'll see if the Lakers can turn it around. They have the Trailblazers and Warriors to wrap up the month of February. So again, two games that are most likely going to be a little tricky for the Lakers, but we'll see if they can get out of this slump coming up with those next two games to wrap up the month of February. But another game last night that caught my attention was the Hawks 127-112 win over Boston, mostly because, again, Trae Young. I feel like anytime All-Star or players that get snubbed from the All-Star game, once that becomes official, it just adds an extra edge for the next couple of games, really up until the All-Star break. I mean, I feel like Trae Young with every shot last night was thinking to himself, oh, you're not going to put me in the All-Star game? All right, I'm going to take three steps across half court and show you how good I am and pull up from this range. And, of course, Danilo Gallinari as well, hitting 10 three-pointers in the game last night. I mean, the two of them, Young and Gallinari, combined for 71 of the Atlanta 127 points. So those two guys went completely off last night. But I always feel like when guys get snubbed and when it's kind of a majority agreement that they got snubbed, I feel like every game up until that All-Star break, they're just playing with some extra fire, which is fun to see. And Atlanta got a big win last night over Boston, who, again, just like the Lakers, kind of continued to plummet down the standings. This is a team that's lost three in a row. They're 3-7 in their last 10, but they have now fallen outside of playoff position. Boston, who was up in that top four for the first part of the season, started tumbling down towards the middle of the standings, now in ninth place in the Eastern Conference, kind of right there with Miami and New York. And that is not the kind of crowd that Boston wants to be hanging around with right now in the Eastern Conference standings. And really, I mean, it's just been rocky play for Boston. I mean, you look at those last three games that they've lost, the 120-115 collapse against the Pelicans back on Sunday, and they lost by three to the Mavericks, 110-107, with Doncic, once again hit a step-back deep three-pointer for the win, which is starting to become a little bit of his signature shot in the NBA right now. But then this 112-127 blowout loss to the Hawks, not a great look. And Boston's having some problems, obviously, a little bit of injury issues, but still just not getting that same level of play from those stars. And two teams, really, I feel like Boston and Miami, two teams that last year with a lot of youth were making some big noise in the NBA, not having that same kind of effect. And not overly surprised, I guess, in terms of Miami, because, Jimmy Butler, guys like Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, while they are very good players, I feel like they're still maturing, they're still coming into their own. Same with some of the young players for Boston. But it felt like that Boston trio last year had been building to a breakthrough, and this season I was expecting to see a little bit more of that, and just, I mean, not seeing it at all now. It was there a little bit at the start of the season, but I just don't feel like I'm seeing it at all now from Boston. So, concerning for the Celtics that, if this trio can't get it back on track, if, Tatum, Brown, and Walker, when they're all three healthy, can't get it back on track for Boston, it's going to be some just tough going for that team. And the way this Eastern Conference is right now, I mean, it's pretty unpredictable, but if you can't get yourself back into that place of being a contender, this is what's going to happen. You're going to plummet outside of the playoff standings, and who knows how far Boston could fall if they don't turn this around. And so we'll see. We'll see if they can do that. They have the Pacers and the Wizards at the end of this month. So obviously Indiana right now sitting in fourth place there in the Eastern Conference. That's not going to be an easy game for them. But Washington still down in 13th place in the East. Could be an opportunity for Boston to get that turned around. So we'll see if they're able to do it or not. But definitely not the way that two title-contending teams in the Lakers and the Celtics would like to be going right now, both on multiple-game losing streaks. We'll see if they can turn that around. But the run of the NBA, always entertaining and always fun to watch. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk NHL after the break. Some fun games last night, some busy day of games coming up today. So we'll talk about that on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Fun night on the ice last night and some shakeups in the Western Division. We will get to that. First off, the day started with 2-3-0 wins yesterday in the world of the NHL. The Lightning got a 3-0 win over the Hurricanes, which helped put Tampa Bay back up into second place there in the Central Division, knock Carolina down to third. But then Dallas getting a 3-0 win over the first-place Florida Panthers in that division. Florida, though, still holding on to first place by a point over Tampa Bay and Carolina. But the Stars, of course, were a team that came out of the gate after their season was postponed, came out of the gate guns blazing, and then really kind of ran into a wall, then had the weather issues, postponed some more games in their season, and just not really seeming like they could get that momentum back, get that pop back to their offense. But defensively had a really nice game last night, and they were able to get the 3-0 win over Carolina, or over Florida, sorry, not the Carolina Panthers, the Florida Panthers, last night, which again helps the Stars a little bit. They're now in sixth place there in the Central Division, only, they're still 8 points off of Chicago in fourth, so still some ground to make up for Dallas and Nashville, both at 16 points. But a strong win there for Dallas, at least some kind of good news for them to get that 3-0 win, especially on the road. So we'll see if they can keep that going. I believe they have a game today against the Florida Panthers again. So we'll see if they can keep that going and build on that 3-0 win from yesterday. But some other games, the Flyers and Rangers. Philadelphia coming away with a 4-3 win over New York. It was the return of Claude Giroux to Philadelphia, and he assisted on 3 of the 4 Philadelphia goals in that game. So he's obviously a big piece of that team, and in his first game back, playing a big role in getting 3 assists last night in the game. But Philadelphia and New York, obviously, the Rangers missing Artemi Panarin, stepping away to deal with some personal problems going on right now, but still a Rangers team that has really just looked for some offensive firepower last night. And while they didn't have a ton of it throughout the season, we're able to put some pressure on Philadelphia in the game last night. At least keep it close. Philadelphia got out to a 1-0 lead and really was trying to pull away at 3-1 there in the second period, but New York just wouldn't let them get away. So the Rangers fighting in or staying in that game by fighting and just giving themselves great chances around the net and able to capitalize on some of those. But Claude Giroux, kind of deciding factor in that game for the Flyers last night, just being that presence on the ice, attracting the attention he attracts and helping set up other teammates that are able to finish it off. And Philadelphia now up into third place, 21 points, tied with two other teams with 21 points, that being Pittsburgh and the New York Islanders. All three of those teams is 1 point back of Washington in second and 3 points back of Boston in first. So a tight battle going on there in the Eastern Division. And going to the Northern Division real quick, the Maple Leafs and the Flames going to overtime last night in Toronto, but William Nylander, the man for the Maple Leafs, as he got both goals for Toronto. Calgary was able to get on the board, and really no scoring through the first 40 minutes of this game, but we get to the third period, and action really started to pick up there. I mean, really, it was back-and-forth action throughout, just good defense and good goaltending between those two teams for the first two periods, but Calgary able to break the scoreless tie just into the third period. I always get it mixed up because obviously every other sport pretty much puts down the time left in the period or the quarter when the score happens. Hockey puts the amount of time that they were into the period when it happened. So I always get a little confused. So the first goal actually coming with a little less than 4.5 minutes to go in this game. And then, of course, William Nylander just comes to life for the Maple Leafs. He got the game-tying goal with a little less than 90 seconds to go in the game, then got the OT winner just over a minute into the game, over a minute into the overtime period there for the Maple Leafs. So William Nylander getting his 6th and 7th goals of the season last night, tying the game up and winning it for the Maple Leafs. So a nice performance from William Nylander there for Toronto. And then 3 games in the Western Division last night that were all pretty entertaining. I mean, the fact that the Wild got a 6-2 win over the Avalanche, again, a Colorado team that has so much power and so much talent. And this is a team now that has slipped down to 6th place in the Western Conference. They have lost 2 games in a row. Not they don't really have that bad of a record through their last 10. They're 6-3-1 in their last 10, but losing 2 games in a row back to, Tahoe game? Was that the... No, they lost to Vegas back on Monday, 3-0, and then, of course, losing last night to the Wild, 6-2. So Vegas, I can understand, being a first-place team, but this Minnesota team, now up to 5th place, jumped Colorado with that win yesterday to take over 5th from the Avalanche. And again, these teams at the bottom of the Western Division, really all these teams in the Western Division, They may not look as intimidating on paper as some of the other teams in the NHL, but they're just as scrappy. If you don't come prepared, they can put a game like that up on you when Minnesota connects for 6 goals and beats the Avalanche 6-2. Then we had a shootout game between the Coyotes and the Ducks. Those two have put on some fun games so far this year. Arizona, though, coming away with the victory 4-3. That helps Arizona in fourth place now with 21 points, level with Los Angeles. And then Anaheim still down in last place with 16 points. But speaking of the LA Kings, they continue to be the hottest team in the NHL. 6 consecutive wins for the LA Kings as they beat the Blues last night 2-1 on the road. So Los Angeles with the longest active winning streak in the NHL, and they have found themselves all the way up to third place in the Western Division with 21 points, one back of St. Louis now in second, and just 2 points back of Vegas in first. This is an LA Kings team that out of the gate was sixth, seventh, sometimes eighth place in the Western Division. Now all of a sudden they've rocketed back up to third place, and in a division that literally first to eighth, first to last, separated by just 7 points, each night can completely alter these standings. And now Los Angeles up to third. I think they were fifth or sixth yesterday, and now up to third place there in the Western Division. So a strong showing. They're from arguably the hottest team in the NHL, the Los Angeles Kings. So we'll see if they can keep that up when they are on the ice next. They do not have a game tonight, so we'll have to wait and see if they can carry this momentum into their next game, which will be Friday when they are on the road against the Minnesota Wild, who are on a 4-game winning streak of their own. So we'll see where those two teams are when we get to that game on Friday. Actually, they'll both be in that position because I thought Minnesota played today, but they do not. So that could be a fun game to watch tomorrow. The Kings on a 6-game winning streak, Minnesota on a 4-game winning streak, meeting up and seeing who can end whose winning streak first there. So that'll be a fun game for tomorrow or for Friday, which is tomorrow. Good mercy, I get so crossed up with some days now. I just feel like they kind of blend together. But nonetheless, today is Thursday. And a fun slate of games coming up in the world of the NHL. Let's get to the action that we'll see. I mean, Boston and the New York Islanders going back at it. The Bruins will play their first game since their 7-3 trouncing of the Philadelphia Flyers up in Tahoe on Sunday. And the Islanders, when they play Boston at home, have been kind of a thorn in the side of the Bruins because they handed Boston their first two regulation losses of the season, both at that Nassau Coliseum, January 18th. Islanders beat Boston 1-0, and then February 13th beat Boston 4-2. So once again, the Islanders welcome Boston into New York, and we'll see if the Islanders can stay hot at home against the Bruins. And then a big matchup when it comes to the Eastern Division, because these two teams have locked up several times this year already, but Washington and Pittsburgh, just 1 point separating the two, and it's been a series that has really favored the Penguins this year. Pittsburgh has won 3 in a row and 5 of their past 6 going 5-1, and they've won 4 of their first 5 games against the Capitals this year. So this has been a series that Pittsburgh has been able to dominate for the most part this season, and if they can get a win against Washington tonight, that'll put Pittsburgh up over Washington in the standings. And right now that could very well mean Pittsburgh is jumping up into that second seed there in the East. So we'll see what that should be. You know, it's a fun game. Anytime Crosby and Ovechkin get on the same ice, it's usually a fun game, and I imagine it'll be another fun classic between those two. Then Carolina goes to visit Tampa Bay. The Hurricanes and the Lightning getting ready to play their second of a back-to-back games in 4th in 6 days. They are tied for second there in that Central Division, 1 point behind the Panthers. So it could be a very important game there as Florida once again hosts the Dallas Stars. And Florida defenseman Keith Yandle set to pass Steve Larmer for third place in the NHL history books by playing his 885th consecutive game in the NHL. Doug Jarvis is the record holder with 964 games, which is 50 ahead of Gary Younger. So Florida defenseman Keith Yandle kind of working his way up that record book, but I can't even imagine 885 consecutive games. Whew. That is quite the run. That was a bad attempt at a whistle there, but that was quite the run for Keith Yandle. So he'll get to see if he can help the Florida Panthers rebound from that 3-0 loss to Dallas last night and get back in and at least try to hold the lead there in the Central Division. Then Chicago going on the road against Columbus. Blackhawks 4-1 in their past five games. The Blue Jackets have lost four of their last five games, despite Patrick Laine scoring six goals in 10 games since he was traded to Columbus from the Winnipeg Jets back in late January, which has included two power play goals and one assist in that 6-5 shootout loss to the Blackhawks on Tuesday. So we'll see if Columbus can bounce back from that. But also something to watch in that Columbus-Chicago game, Patrick Kane is just two goals away from becoming the 100th player to score 400 goals. And we'll see if he can accomplish that tonight against Columbus. But this has been a matchup that Patrick Kane has really, really enjoyed because he has scored 12 points in five games against Columbus so far this season. He has scored 33 points in his past 19 games against Columbus and has a total of 67 points in 51 career games against Columbus, which is the most against any NHL opponent for Patrick Kane. So if there was a night for him to get to that 400 goal mark, it could very well be against a team that he seems to be very comfortable with tearing apart out there on the ice. So we'll see if he can accomplish that. Then we have Calgary at Ottawa in a matchup there of that Northern Division. And we'll see Ottawa again, a team that is playing so much better than they had been recently before they got into this hot streak where they just managed to figure out Montreal and they were competing with teams like Toronto. But the Flames visit the Senators for the first of three straight games. And again, Ottawa, four of its past six, it's won. So this is a team that's playing probably the best hockey they've played all year. And what's kind of fun about that is it's also going to be a battle of brothers. Matthew Tkachuk and Brady Tkachuk will face off tonight when Calgary plays Ottawa. And they'll play again. They'll play each other five times in the next 11 days, which includes those three consecutive games in Ottawa. But this is it's always fun when you see brothers and family going up against each other, and especially, when it's two Canadian teams, the passion around that sport up there, I think just adds a little bit more to it. But it'll be fun to see what these two guys can do and how they push each other. Again, it's always fun when you don't always get players or family members that can play against each other in the same game, because you have some instances where, if you look at football, both players play on defense, never really on the field at the same time. But when you have something like basketball or hockey and you can be out there at the same time, or soccer playing against each other, it's always fun. So we'll get to see both Tkachuk brothers going at it tonight when Calgary plays Ottawa. New Jersey goes to Buffalo. The Sabres looking for their third consecutive victory against New Jersey, who will try to avoid their season high fourth straight loss. But Buffalo's goalie Linus Ullmark is looking to make that a little bit tougher for New Jersey to accomplish. He has a 1.95 goals against average and 9.42 save percentage in three games against New Jersey this season. So it's not going to be a easy night for the New Jersey Devils if they want to try and get back into that win column. But we'll see if they can do that. Then Nashville and Detroit, two teams in the bottom of that Central Division, getting ready to do battle tonight. The Red Wings averaging just 1.86 goals per game, which is last in the NHL, and were defeated by the Predators 2-0 on Tuesday. Nashville ends a four-game road trip looking for that third straight victory. And really, Detroit's been a team that a lot of teams in the Central Division this year have been able to find success against. But you can say that same thing about Nashville as well, the two teams in the bottom of this division. So we'll see if Nashville can at least build on that win they had back on Tuesday and get another win and just put them maybe a little bit closer to not being in last place in the division. But some other games from the North going on. Montreal at Winnipeg, and this will be the first game for the Montreal Canadiens interim head coach after they fired Claude Julien after they lost to Ottawa for the third time in four games this season. Dominique Ducharme will coach his first game for the Canadiens tonight. And we'll have to, again, a lot of talent for that Winnipeg team. Pierre-Luc Dubois, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler. So it's going to be a tough game for Montreal. And again, that Northern Division is very, very difficult. And it was seeming like Ottawa was going to be the way for a team to get back on track. Now the Senators are playing so well, and Montreal has really fallen off. Again, 3 losses in 4 games against the Senators. So having to go on the road against the Winnipeg Jets, who right now is in third place, just above Montreal there. But if the Canadiens can figure out a way to win, they will leapfrog Winnipeg into third place. So this could be a nice bounce-back game for the Canadiens and a way for them to move up in the standings a little bit there over Winnipeg. So we'll see if they are able to do that. The other game going on in the North, the Edmonton Oilers and the Vancouver Canucks. The Canucks have won 2 of their past 12 games at 2-8-2 while blowing, again, multi-goal leads in their past 2 games. So not the stretch that Vancouver wants to be on right now in that Northern Division. Even though they do have a 5-point cushion to Ottawa in last place, they are kind of right on the cusp of being in that playoff battle, 4 points back of Montreal in fourth. So Vancouver looking to try to end that streak tonight. But the Oilers have won 4 in a row in 7 of their past 8. And, of course, with the duo of Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, that team is always going to be dangerous. So a tough ask for Vancouver to turn their this streak of poor performances around against a team like Edmonton. But we'll see if they can do that. But that's where we are in the world of the NHL. We're going to take a break when we come back. Some news around some big stars in the NFL. We'll talk about it on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Well, it's never too, I don't know, early or late, depending on where you feel we are in the offseason. But it's never a bad time to talk NFL, especially with big names out there possibly changing locations or just looking for a new deal or whatever it might be. It's never a bad time to talk football. So let's do that a little bit here, because we had 3 names that kind of I've heard come up the last few days, kind of talking about where they are, where their team is, and what could possibly be coming up. And one that I think is kind of the easiest or the most brief to talk about is Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. The Steelers said they would welcome Big Ben back. They want him back. And at this point, why not? Bring him back, because obviously he is a well-tuned quarterback. He, you know, didn't have the greatest second half of the season last year, but neither did really anybody on that Pittsburgh Steelers team. So you get maybe a little more of a running game for the Steelers, and you know, you back who knows that offense, who knows that team, and obviously try to give him as many weapons as you can. And why not? I mean, if you're Pittsburgh, why try to start over with your quarterback right now? Well, you don't have to. If Big Ben wants to play and you want him back, have him back and give him some weapons. Really, you need a ground game. You can't just ask. I mean, as great of a passer as Big Ben is, and as big of a guy as he is, and as tough to take down in the pocket, you need to be somewhat balanced. Even though we're in a world of the NFL that seems to value the pass more over the run nowadays, you still have to have some kind of balance. Even if you're, you know, a majority passing team, there has to still be the threat that you could run the ball. And Pittsburgh just really didn't have that last year. And that's going to affect the way teams play you. When you don't have that threat of a running game, they're going to make you beat them that way, and they're going to take away all of your passing opportunities. They you know, teams towards the end of the season made Pittsburgh try to beat them with their run game, and Pittsburgh, in most cases, didn't even really try to do that, it didn't feel like. So bring Big Ben back, keep that veteran presence and that talent in your quarterback position and give him a running game and some weapons around him on offense, and I think Pittsburgh can contend in that AFC North division. We will have to see if Cincinnati has a healthy Joe Burrow for the whole season. I mean, Cincinnati definitely looking like a better team last year with Burrow at quarterback. So hopefully he is ready to go for this upcoming season, and he'll be able to play the whole 16 games or into the postseason for Cincinnati. But if I think about that AFC North with Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cleveland, and Cincinnati, if all four of those teams keep their quarterback healthy, it really could come down to, you know, those last couple divisional games. And I feel like the experience of Big Ben with his skill, if he has a run game behind him, could really make Pittsburgh a tough foe. They're already more tough than they usually already are there in the NFL. But I think it's a no-brainer if you're Pittsburgh and you want Big Ben back, he wants to come back. Bring him back in, give him a run game, and see what you can do there in Pittsburgh. But let's stay in the realm of the quarterback, because Russell Wilson being talked about, saying that he is okay right now in Seattle. He's not demanding any kind of a trade, but he did essentially put together a list of four teams that if Seattle were to look for some kind of an option, if they were to look for a move from Russell Wilson, those are the four teams that he would like to go to. And those four teams were Dallas, New Orleans, Las Vegas, and Chicago. And if I am either of those four teams, I would be interested in getting Russell Wilson. I mean, if you're New Orleans and we're expecting Drew Brees to retire, why not try to go out and get somebody that, again, knows how to lead a team to a championship and win a championship to fill in for Drew Brees? And I can understand wanting to give Winston a shot if Sean Payton has a lot of faith in Jameis Winston. I, right now, based on what we saw in Tampa Bay, do not. So if it was a possibility to get Russell Wilson there in New Orleans, and if that meant even giving up Winston and, I just blanked on his name. Gosh, Taysom Hill. Even if that means you give up Winston and Taysom Hill, maybe a couple draft picks, Russell Wilson, I think, is worth it. If you give him weapons like Alvin Kamara, you give him weapons like Michael Thomas, that offense with Russell Wilson could be deadly down there in the NFC South. And again, I would sign up every week to see Russell Wilson versus Tom Brady. And depending on where Carolina possibly goes in the draft, depending on where Atlanta could possibly go in the draft for a quarterback, that could create some fun viewings too. So as a fan, I'd love to see Russell Wilson in that division. And if you're a New Orleans Saints fan, how could you not want Russell Wilson on your team with what he's been able to do and what he's shown us every year? And then for the other three teams, if you're Dallas, if you're Las Vegas, and you're Chicago, yeah, it would be an upgrade at quarterback to get Russell Wilson down there. And I could see Dallas, I mean, who knows? I don't know if it would be a straight Russell Wilson for Dak Prescott trade. I imagine Seattle would not do that. They're going to want a fair amount back for their star quarterback there in Russell Wilson. But if Dallas isn't fully committed to Dak, which they haven't really shown us that they are, that could be a nice way for Dak to get a fresh start in Seattle and Russell Wilson to come down. And again, just Russell Wilson as a person, as a player, as a presence will bring so much to any of those four teams. If I think about Dallas and I think about Chicago, those quarterbacks, I mean, really, not the same kind of position there, so I shouldn't put them together. But if I think about Dallas possibly letting Dak, if you're not fully sold on him, let him go to Seattle. There's enough up there to where he can, I think, have a pretty exciting kind of rebirth almost to his career. And if you're Chicago, Trubisky and Foles have given you nothing. If you could bring in Russell Wilson to Chicago after what they've had the last couple seasons, that'd be like going from a minivan to a Ferrari. How could you not want to do that if you're Chicago? And same thing with Las Vegas. I mean, Derek Carr has shown some good things there in his time. Obviously, if he hadn't gotten hurt a few seasons ago, who knows what the Raiders would have been able to do in the postseason. But this is still a team that I feel like, you know, Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota, two good quarterbacks, but compared to Russell Wilson, not on the same level. So any of those four teams, if they are really serious about going for Russell Wilson, the fact that that's a list that he put together, I say go for it. Why not? Why not? What do you really have to lose in going for an MVP caliber player who knows what it's like to lead a team to a championship and knows what it's like to win one? And if I'm Russell Wilson, if I had to kind of organize those teams in terms of 1-4, I would imagine that New Orleans is probably up at number 1. Vegas would probably be number 2, Dallas at 3, and Chicago at 4. If I was Russell Wilson, that's probably how I would organize those four teams in terms of number 1 being the team I'd most want to go to and 4th being the least, you know, the team I'd least want to go to. But still, the fact that he picked those four teams, I think Chicago should absolutely try to go for it right now. Granted, you know, they probably have to give up more for Russell Wilson, so he'd come into a team that's essentially depleted in terms of weapons, so that could work against him in that sense. But I mean, Vegas, Dallas, New Orleans, those are teams that I feel like could put together a trade for Russell Wilson. Again, you're going to lose a fair amount, but still, a trade they could put together for Russell Wilson, get him there, and still have enough around him to really be a contender. So we'll see what happens, but I thought that was interesting that that's a list that Russell Wilson put together right there. I did want to talk a little about J.J. Watt, but I'm running out of time and don't want to cut myself off here at the end of the show. So we're going to run to break. We'll be right back to wrap up the show here on this Thursday on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Alrighty, wrapping up this Thursday show here. One more little note from the world of the NFL I wanted to get to. Just a little quickly here. J.J. Watt, obviously, another big name that is looking for a new home after being released from Houston. And apparently there are about a dozen offers being made to J.J. Watt. And currently the most lucrative offer is believed to be between $15 and $16 million. But some of those teams that have been essentially kind of public about wanting J.J. Watt: Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and Buffalo. And, I mean, really, I could see J.J. Watt fitting in on any one of those four teams, but what team wouldn't want that kind of presence and talent on their defensive line? I think every team, most teams in the NFL, I think at least three-quarters of the NFL would love to have that kind of presence and veteran leadership on their defensive line. The fact that, you know, just about half the league is going for him tells you the amount of respect and the amount of interest he does carry, which I can't disagree with. But that is the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back on the air tomorrow at 1 o'clock. It is Friday, so it'll be the special two-hour version of the show. We'll have our friends Terry in here in studio. We'll have our pal Saxman Rick Metz as well. So talk to you tomorrow. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Peace.